Are you recording now? Yes. Should we restart the audio track since you're
No,
off?
You're good. We're in Patreon territory. The show hasn't started yet.
Oh, perfect.
We're just in banter. You said Ready Player One was good?
Yes, I was so shocked because the trailers are not. And then I went to see it, and it turns out they are hiding everything great about the movie. The entire movie is essentially a spoiler. So
you have to watch every 80s film to get it?
No, but I will say, you would think that they would be doing, like, Back to the Future and all of, like, the popcorny 80s movies. Us as right. cinephiles will be incredibly, incredibly happy with what
really?
Spielberg does. I did. Okay. I had a moment where I was like, oh, I can't believe he chose that movie.
All right. Well, I didn't think I would be looking forward to that, but I guess maybe I am. I've heard most people seem to think it's going to be terrible, but
I all did right, as and, well.
Yeah, having
well, I guess that's a. Oh, go ahead, Josh.
I was saying, having read the book, I wasn't really all looking forward to the film all that much. I didn't care for the book very much, and but it's good to hear that it might work better as a film than as a book.
I was astonished at how much I liked it.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. Well, I actually picked up the audiobook, but I still haven't listened because, you know, how much time do you have when you're listening to podcasts and everything else? So, all right, well, I guess we're doing the show. So, hey, guys, we have Josh Hornbeck and Robert Taylor here. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
So, first appearance for Josh, second appearance for Robert, but it's been a while. We had a scheduling mishap. I can't remember what happened, but I had to cancel a show. Maybe I got sick. I forget. I don't know, but sorry about that. But welcome back. And so we're going to talk a lot of stuff. We're going to talk, of course, about Criterion. We're going to get into Elevator to the Gallows. We're going to talk about the new TCM Warner Filmstruck deal, which is a pretty, actually, I'd say not just a pretty big thing, but a huge deal. And so just want to say hello and what you've been up to, Josh?
Yeah.
Welcome again.
Thank you. This is a lot of fun. I'm really excited to be here today. Yeah, I've been doing some podcasting with David Blakesley on his Criterion Reflections podcast. Once he sent the invitation out, I thought it was a great way to get networked a little more with the Criterion online community. And I love talking movies and being able to analyze them. I think it's a great place to do that. So I'm really excited to be doing more of this. I just recently on my website posted my Oscar reflections before the ceremony started. So I felt good about getting most of my predictions pretty right. And I'm working slowly on finishing up a little essay about my favorite film discoveries of last year. So some of the Criterion
stuff.
Is
that for Brian?
This is just my own personal list of films that I found really meaningful over the last year. So yeah, it's fun. And then I work in communications, and we just released the first in a series of videos that I'm really proud of, where we've interviewed survivors from the Japanese internment camps in the area.
Oh, wow.
And so we'll be releasing them every few months. And I'm really proud of the work. I feel like sometimes the videos we do at my work are talking head videos that aren't of any interest to people outside of the community. But I'm really, really proud of the work that we got to do. So, yeah.
Awesome. And Robert, hello. Welcome back. What have you been up to?
How do I follow that up?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Well, first off, I'm so happy to be here on such a nice, light week where we can just sort of take our time and really dig into everything. But I have been up to Spirit Riding Free, which is the show that I write for on DreamWorks. The new season is coming out on Friday, so everybody check it out. I wrote the season premiere. Other than that, I have been watching a lot of movies and doing my usual work as a head mentor with the Young Storytellers Foundation. We're having, we go into impoverished schools in the LA area and teach kids literacy and then bring in stars to act out their stories. So it's super fun and awesome, and that is my life currently.
That's fantastic.
That is awesome. I don't think you top Josh. I think you guys are equal. I don't really have much. I kind of do have much. It's not very philanthropic, but I bought a Mac this week and I have a new mic. So if I sound a little different, that's why. And actually, this is a more sensitive mic. So if you might pick up a little more bath. I almost said bathroom. You might pick up more background noise. And actually, that the pee breaks for the Patreon people, they might get actual. Yeah, never mind.
if you decide to drink a beer this week, Aaron, we will all know.
Nah, it's too early for me today. But if you don't mind, let me give you a couple of Patreon shout-outs. We have five here, and you guys are welcome to chime in. Well, I should mention that we did the first, mailings, the rewards from Patreon this week, and it was kind of a big deal. We gave everybody postcards from Criterion, which it was a lot of fun. I actually spent a morning handwriting very terribly. I have really bad handwriting and unapologetically. Little notes to people thanking them, and I tried to pair the movie with the people however much I could. You only have so many postcards and so many people, and then the first disc rewards was kind of a big deal. We sent out the World Cinema Project Volume 2 to somebody, and then we also send out The Hunt to somebody. So we're going to try to do a Region A and a Region B every month if we can, as long as we can afford it. I think we'll be able to. And if I could just shout out a few people here. These are all $5 contributors. We have J.J. Fowler. Thank you, J.J. He's a regular contributor to Now and some other Criterion groups or film groups. Really good guy. Gives good contributions. We have Jacob Rivera, who is... he's been on Wrong Reel. He hasn't been on Rcast, but I don't think he's in the group. But the great thing is he always does a Follow Friday on Twitter and always includes me. And I just happens that my busiest days at work are Fridays, so I never get to check Twitter. And usually when I get home, I just have like a ton of notifications, and it's too late to jump on those. But thank you, Jacob. I do appreciate that. We also have Eric Osborne, who is a recent member. He recently posted in Now about Romare, and he wants us to talk about Romare on Arrow Now, which I think we will do that in a future episode. We also have Jason Beamish, who is a fixture in these groups. He's been a guest on this podcast and others. I think we all know Admiral Beamish. He writes at Film Ruminations, a good guy. Thank you, Jason. And then last but not least, we have Jesse Athey, who is a regular contributor, seems like a very nice guy. I think he always posts really interesting stuff, pretty funny too, which is helpful. And since you're on, I'll shout out Josh. I saw you joined the fray the other day, so thank you, Josh.
Pleased to be able to support. I listened to some of the banter in between episodes, and you know, it is some of the most enjoyable parts of shows sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes when the not the mic's off, but the camera's off, you have more fun. And no guilt to you, Robert, that you haven't joined. No pressure on anybody.
I'll join too.
You don't have to. we're thrilled that we've had such a great response. As Robert sarcastically alluded to, we have a lot to talk about this week, and I'm going to do what I can to keep it under control and not make it a three-hour episode. But just first, we had this thing called the Oscars this week, and I wanted to see if you guys had some brief reactions. And just alphabetically, Josh, what did you watch the Oscars?
I did. So Oscars are kind of my Super Bowl time. I don't really care for many sporting events, and during the month I try to watch as many as I can, and this year I was able to see everything except for one of the foreign language films, and so I felt really, really proud of that, and it was a lot of fun. This was one of those years where I would have been happy if just about any film won Best Picture. I thought that they were all pretty good, and I really, the ceremony itself felt a little safe. Like, everyone was worried about saying the wrong thing. But my wife and I actually, we don't have broadcast TV, so we checked into a hotel and decided to watch it live that way and had a little personal Oscar party, and it was really
delightful. I love that.
It was probably, we decided we liked this as a new tradition for us. So, it was fun. I love the Oscars as bloated as they get. So I will be a lifelong fan.
Sweet. So Robert, what do you say? What about the Oscars?
I was, like Josh, very, very happy with all of the nominees for Best Picture. I thought that they all deserved their spot. I was most touched by James Ivory finally winning and doing a call-out to his compadres at Merchant Ivory in his acceptance speech. I actually got a little teary-eyed when that happened. Aside from that, the ceremony was pretty bland. I was happy that Shape of Water won, and I keep laughing at the people who are saying that it was the safe choice, as if the the mute woman who is having sex with the fish and is being helped out by her gay bestie and black woman is somehow, you know, just usual Oscar fodder, right?
I think that speaks for today and what we determine is safe today in 2018. It was funny, I saw just before we came on the show, somebody had posted a Amazon review where somebody was mad that they didn't get to see the fish person's junk. So that was funny. A lot of jokes and memes have come out about that. I thought it was a fine ceremony. I think I wasn't displeased. I'll say my vote was Phantom Thread for most things, and it came away with a jet ski and best costume design, which makes sense. So I guess just real quick, Robert, what was your pick? If you had a pick for Oscar winner, what would you have gone with?
Oh, I would have gone with Call Me by Your Name, and Phantom Thread would have been second.
Okay, and Josh, what about you?
I would have gone with Phantom Thread. That just blew me away when I saw it, and I've continued to think about it and ponder it over the last months. Yeah,
I think Phantom Thread seems to be the cinephile nut, especially at Criterion. We did a little poll about what people wanted to win in the Now group, and everybody said pretty convincingly Phantom Thread. So, but it did win something. That's good. Let's move on. You guys ready for some Criterion stuff?
Definitely.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, we just released. Tom Jones was just released. Actually, it's been a couple weeks now. We had a slow start to March. And then this week we have a big week with Scorsese's The Age of Innocence. And then the week after that we have and The Passion of Joan of Arc. So, Josh, any thoughts on these four?
You know, I haven't seen Tom Jones, but it just came in the mail yesterday. So I really liked The Entertainer and am interested in seeing what he does with more of a period costume drama. Age of Innocence is fantastic. I love that film. And Ball, to me, was the one that I'm most excited for this month because I know nothing about it. I like Fassbender. I like Schlorendorf. And it'll be really fun to see something that just is off the radar for me.
Yeah. What about you, Robert?
I am hoping that you like Tom Jones. I hate it. I watched the first.
You're not alone.
I attempted to rewatch it so we could discuss it on the show, and I made it about 18 minutes in before my body actually just rejected it and picked up the remote and stopped the Blu-ray player. But if you enjoy it, I'm happy and enjoy the fact that you enjoy it. Yeah, Age of Innocence is my favorite Scorsese, so I could not be more excited. I could not be more excited. Is that correct? Who knows? I'm excited. Passion of Joan of Arc, I'm so happy, is getting the upgrade.
Yeah.
And can you say Ball again, Aaron, really quick?
Ball.
Is it just me, or does the cover remind you of that fresco Jesus painting that the woman turned into, like, the weird cookie Jesus? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No idea.
I think I may.
I will send you a link, but it's this woman screwed up a Jesus painting from the fresco. It's hilarious. I can't wait to see it. That said, I'm going to take my time because I am a little Fassbendered out, and I know that he's only acting in it, but I saw Alexander Vanderplatz, and I'm still recovering.
Cool. Well, we'll hold that thought. I was going to watch Tom Jones, but it just takes a lot of time to set up a computer, so I didn't get as much time to movie watch this week. Well, the big news this week was, well, actually a week ago, it's been 2 weeks since we did a show, is there was the big TCM Warner Archive Filmstruck news. So, and we'll cover this a little bit in the Filmstruck section, but boy, the Filmstruck section is there's a lot of content there. I don't know how we'll be able to keep up with it all. I'm just going to say we can't keep up with it all. So, just correct me if keep me honest here, guys, but Warner Archive is gone, or going away, the streaming service, that is, and maybe the DVD. That wasn't announced, but this is an interesting direction. And then TCM is now part of Filmstruck. They've always been sort of the back end of Filmstruck, and they've always been involved. However, now they're actually putting in TCM, I guess curated content into the main channel. And we're already seeing that with the Actor of the Week or Actress of the Week, Director of the Week, and then they have this thing called TCM Select, which we'll get into. So I think that's welcome. I think a lot of the TCM fans probably expected that from day one and didn't get it. But Robert, have you checked out the new Filmstruck?
Oh my God, it's so amazing. I, as a film fan, am just over the moon by all of the additions, the throwing in of all the TCM stuff. It is what I always imagined Filmstruck would be, and I'm so excited. And this is not me being sarcastic. I am over. I'm just excited.
Do that again, Robert. Okay. Josh, how 1 to 10 excitement?
This is a 10. This is huge. I got the email from Warner Archive because I still had that that subscription. I wasn't using it very often, and I had been thinking about canceling it for a few months, but just kept. You know, the whole thing with a lot of these subscriptions is you you keep them well past the point of use sometimes. And hearing that they were going to actually be shutting it down and canceling my subscription and migrating all the content over to Filmstruck was really great news. I would love it if Filmstruck was able to incorporate a few more of those more boutique and indie and art house streaming services, because I think I love what they do with it. I love the themes, the content curation. I think it's a really, really sharp service, and I'm really excited. I watched The Thin Man this week.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to get the Filmstruck created intros now by Ben Mankiewicz, and there's so much content now. I almost don't need another streaming service.
And we could get into home media and streaming and all that in a lot of detail. So I'm going to move on quickly. But it seems like that this could be the beginning of streaming conglomeration. That you might just find that Amazon, Netflix, and Filmstruck might be the movie streaming services, and the others might fade away. Who knows? I guess Hulu. There's still going to be a place for a lot of them, but this is pretty big for art and classic film. I think Filmstruck is now, without question, the one-stop shop. So we'll see about, Mubi and Fandor and see how those work out. Yeah. I think they're doing fine. Okay. I don't know about fine, but they're surviving. I don't know going forward. So, okay, well, we have some Criterion news. Are you guys ready for that?
Yeah. Yep.
All right, well, we had the March newsletter drawing, which is always fun, and this one had a magician with a hat, and rather than pulling a rabbit out of the hat, he pulled a D, distinct letter D, out of the hat. So this one, well, it's a clever clue, but I think we got it pretty quickly. So it is a magic D trick. So Marlena Dietrich is, I think, the consensus. Can you guys think of anything else that this could be?
I mean, it's her costume from Morocco, so I think it's pretty certain that it's going to be Morocco, which I'm happy with, because I love that movie.
Hey, Josh, any thoughts?
Yeah, I was racking my brain, and when someone said Dietrich, I was like, oh, yep, that's the one. So yeah. I can't think of anything else that it could be. I think this is pretty on the nose.
And when I say that we got it, I say somebody got it, and then it made sense. I did not get it. I was like, guy pulling a D out of his hat? No, it makes perfect sense. And so speaking of Morocco, which I haven't seen yet, but I've seen some others with Sternberg, who, of course, there was the Scarlet Empress, was on the newsletter poster. Mm-hmm. So I think it's safe to say we're getting that. And she's done some others with him. Off the top of my head, I think the Blue Angel.
Yeah.
I think there's some others, and there's the other Sternberg set that's out of print, but boy, I would love if this is a Sternberg and Dietrich set, because just imagine the features and talking about how he broke her career, or, you know, made her a star, and that would be just thrilling. So any other thoughts, guys? I don't want to ask, would you be thrilled about a box set? Because I know you would be.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just possibly my favorite star in the history of film. Not because she's the best actress, but just her backstory and everything that she went through over the course of her upbringing in World War II and the sacrifices that she had to make. It's just astounding. I love her so much. And so this is super duper exciting for me.
Yeah, it was really, and we kind of forget what a big star she was. You know, even now, you know, say Jennifer Lawrence doesn't even come anywhere close to where Dietrich and maybe Garbo. Actually, probably Dietrich and Garbo were probably the star rivals back then. Queen Christina and the Scarlet Empress. But yeah, she was larger than life, and she really, despite her background, she really brought a sort of masculinity to her roles as well. And a lot of power. She was a very strong female actress. So I'm looking forward to revisiting a lot more of her work. Hopefully this happens. At least something will.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how forgotten she is now. I'm trying to think, her best known movie would probably be Witness for the Prosecution. And that's more for Wilder than her. Mm-hmm. But she is a fantastic actress.
Yeah.
And I think Sternberg does not get his due either. Outside of our circles. Yeah.
I love The Blue Angel and love to see a Criterion release. I think it's on Kino, so I don't know that we'll get it. But, that pairing of Dietrich and Sternberg in The Blue Angel is absolutely magnificent. And I actually would love to see more of the stuff.
Well, I think it's going to be a 50-disc box set. That's what I'm predicting.
We're getting lots of centennial box sets this year.
And we have some more reading the tea leaves. We have, there's a Janus page in Canada, which is, I didn't even know until this week that there's a Janus Films in Canada. But they had a page that had a number of Janus titles we already know about. But they already also had Secrets and Lies, Cousine, and then Anna Karenina, Duvivier's version. So I've seen Secrets of Lies, and I've wanted to see the other two, but of course Secrets of Lies is brilliant, one of my favorite Lees. So Josh, any thoughts on this grouping, and do you think it means anything?
I would assume that they have it. I think Cousine and the Anna Karenina Duvivier film, I think they're both on Filmstruck. Maybe not. I saw them either on Hulu or on Filmstruck back when Hulu was with Criterion. I love Secrets and Lies. Cousin Cousine is, I found it kind of to be a middling French comedy. It didn't really do much for me. But I really liked Duvivier's Anna Karenina. I thought that was a really great film. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I expect from Cousin Cousine, and that's maybe why I avoided it. Robert, any thoughts on this grouping?
I have nothing to add. I love Secrets and Lies. I think Cousin Cousine has aged rather poorly, and I think it's just really fun to say Duvivier, so I'm going to say that name again, Duvivier.
Awesome.
There you go. Yeah, and Secrets and Lies has been on the Criterion Channel, and it had the wacky C, so I think that there's a good chance that'll come out, and I think that'll be a very crowd-pleasing film. Those who haven't seen it are in for a treat. It's really really moving, quite a ensemble piece.
Yeah.
And then we had, we had some tweets. We had Fallen Angels was tweeted. There was the image of, I believe it was the motorcycle scene. So we've talked about Wong Kar-wai numerous times, and I think we're all expecting some form of release, hopefully this year. But this might be a little bit of a tease, or it might not be. It was a little random. So Fallen Angels, guys?
It can only mean one thing, box set.
Box set, everything he's done. Josh,
I'm excited. I've seen some of his early films. I haven't seen Fallen Angels yet, but I'm the more Wong Kar-wai we get, the better.
More Wong Kar-wai,
go Criterion, yeah.
For sure. This is one I haven't seen. I think I did start to watch it once, and I just got snobby about the print and turned it off. So that's more ammunition to watch the better restoration. And then we had some actual confirmations. So we had Sex, Lies, and Videotape. I don't know if you guys got this email, but Sex, Lies, and Videotape by Soderbergh is coming to the collection. And it got the dead man treatment. They're asking for people to give answers or send questions to Soderbergh. So Sex, Lies, and Videotape, I think it's a staple for the 90s independent movement. So I think it's important in that regard. I don't know that it's aged as well. It's been a long time since I've seen it, so I won't really make a comment. But Robert, you're from the industry, so well, I guess you both are. So, Robert, what do you think of Sex, Lies, and Videotape?
Oddly enough, I somehow missed it. I was too young when it came out, and then I've never watched it, despite the fact that I like Soderbergh. So the promise of having it on Criterion would ensure that I actually check it out. I'm excited. I have heard from friends who have seen it. They echo your sentiment, Aaron. They say that it doesn't hold up quite as well, although the acting apparently is great. I'm excited. I would pick it up in an instant. And Josh, were I you, I would exchange Tom Jones and then get this movie instead.
Does that work? Will they let you do that?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
It's not even out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I saw Secrets and Lies, or sorry, Sex, Lies, and Videotapes years ago, and really, really like it. It liked it then. I haven't seen it since though. So like some of Soderbergh and his more experimental stuff, I have no idea how well it's going to age. But I'm excited to see a new package and see him reflecting on the film today. I think I always like his thoughts about his work. I think he is really honest about how well some things work and how they don't work at times as well. So yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it's nice to also check off another Laserdisc off of the
That's
Criterion
right.
Laserdisc list. So.
And again, it's important. So even if you don't like it, and I may not, Robert may not, but it was important for the 90s indie movement, which of course everybody was apparently sexual harassing the whole decade anyway.
Yeah.
not to make light of that, but I will say that I like Soderbergh as a film buff, as a cinephile like champion. And the one thing I really love that he does is every year he keeps a diary of every bit of content he watches, and for like every month, and he, you know, he talks about or he shows just what TV shows he watches, what book he reads, what movies he watches. And I just find that once a year I'll read this and just be transfixed. And he watches great films, the same stuff that we watch, classic films. He watches his own films numerous times. Probably a lot of those are like screenings and galas and that sort of thing. Like last year was Logan Lucky a lot. And I don't think he's ever going to really retire. He's tried a few times, but hasn't worked. So did you guys like Logan Lucky? Not that that compares to Sex, Lies.
I very much enjoyed it. I thought that it was impeccably written. I haven't seen his new TV show with Sharon Stone yet. I've heard that it's fascinating because of the background and how it's being released, but I haven't had a chance to see it. But Logan Lucky, for sure, I loved.
I have the disc.
It was fun.
I have the disc sitting on my stack of things to watch soon, but I haven't watched it yet. And yeah, I'm excited for Mosaic as well. I have it. I have downloaded the app for my Apple TV to try to jump into this Choose Your Own Adventure experiment of his.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to try it as well. Logan Lucky, I thought it was well done, and I like that he's making light, fun films now, even though I love the experimental stuff too. Well, maybe not love, but I appreciate. The one thing is, living in the South, the accents, especially Daniel Craig, I had a lot of trouble buying those. Yeah, it wasn't that great. But I guess Daniel Craig, he did the best he could. Well, so on that note, since they're doing an email campaign with questions about Sex, Lies, and Videotape, they also did one about Dead Man, which is coming out soon. And what I thought was neat was people on social media were posting about how they got emails from Criterion saying that their emails were included in the questions. And so he is going to answer them on the disc. So I guess that confirms that those people were going to buy it. But so there were some comments on Reddit and the Facebook groups, and I think Criterion Forum. So maybe that'll give more people incentive to send questions to Steven. So did you guys send questions about Dead Man, or do you care?
I didn't, and I'm really, really jealous.
Yeah, I didn't send one about Dead Man. I did for Sex, Lies, and Videotapes. I like Jarmusch, but Soderbergh kind of holds a dearer place to my heart from my early days of getting into art films. So I was really happy to throw in a question for that. But it's really fun to see all of the people saying that their email's been selected and they're getting a free mm-hmm. complimentary copy of the disc. So it's really cool.
Right. So When I said they would be buying it, I guess they'll be telling their friends and their friends will be buying it since they're on the DVD,
yes.
the Blu-ray. I think it's cool that they're doing that. I hope they continue. I'm just going to say Grand Budapest Hotel. Mm. I would send a question about that. I just watched the Fishing with John episode with Tom Waits. Or not Tom Waits, with Jim Jarmusch. Tom Waits as well.
Yeah.
But Jarmusch is great in that. Just a really cool character.
Yeah.
And then, so Robert, you alluded to Fassbender earlier and getting, I'm sorry, was that Robert or Josh?
It was Robert.
Yes.
Yeah. And you talked about Alexander Platz. So would you like to spend another 8 hours on 8 hours make a day? Actually, is it eight hours? So it's five feature films. So it's a 1972 Fassbender TV series. So he, interesting guy, so prolific, worked in both TV and film and made, boy, I don't know how he found the time to do all this, but he has this epic movie TV series that's already been released overseas. We pretty safe to say it's been on Criterion, or it's going to come on Criterion. So have you guys seen it?
I am fascinated by the poster because Everyone is smiling and I'm so confused.
Yeah, so that's where, because we've mentioned this film a number of times on the show, but what's made news now is we have a poster, the Janus Films poster, and yes, everybody's so happy. It's like no other Bergman Fassbender film there is, but of course we all recognize the actors because it's part of the stable. Are you excited for another Fassbender TV series?
I really did not like the first one, but I will say I like Fassbender in general, so I will give it a shot, because why not, right?
Why not? I gotta say, I think 72 Fassbender is probably a little different than 81, was it, for Alexander Platz, but who knows? But they call it his most humanist, even approaching feel-good work, so why not have a happy Fassbender?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite is Ali, Fear Eats the Soul, which is fairly happy. So, as far as things go, it has moments of happiness, so I'm curious to see what they'll look like happy.
Josh, you're going
to
say something?
Yeah, I've been slowly working my way through Fassbender, trying to, you know, take my time with his 40-some movies in 15 years. Each time I really, really appreciate what he's doing. I may not like every film, but I always feel like there's something in there to grab onto. I love the fact that he was making TV miniseries as well as feature films and theater. And mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was just relentless. Probably helped that there was a lot of cocaine involved, but
I don't know about in 72, not as much as 82, that's for sure, but And of course, a couple of years later, he made World on a Wire, mm-hmm. which I think stands up against any film. I love that one. Well,
and I like that Criterion is willing to go into the TV work of some of their auteurs. I think that's really cool because we get to see different ways of approaching storytelling in film. And so I'm always eager to see a new set like this.
Just going to say, Bergman 100, Scenes of a Marriage, mm-hmm. Fanny and Alexander, there's others, right? But those two are the ones that matter. All right, well, we'll move right along. We actually are burning through a lot of this stuff, so maybe it's not as intimidating. Well, this morning, and we're recording this on a Saturday, by the way, we found out that Mazio Amalric was in the Criterion closet. So there was a picture of him holding a copy of Heaven's Gate, so video probably soon to come. Of course, the question is, what's he doing there? And we always want to know. Often these people end up either part of a supplement or their own films coming out. So he directed The Blue Room, but he's acted in a number of features. He was in Grand Budapest Hotel. He's been in a lot of Arnaud Desplechin films. So, and I'll just say that my wife has a big crush on him. I don't know. I don't get it. So she's very charmed by him. And we're big fans of Kings and Queen, which I already tweeted about earlier today. So, Josh, any of these sound interesting, or do you have any experience with Amalric?
I've seen him in films. I don't know that I've seen any of his films. Yeah, this is... I never quite know how to take the Criterion Closet videos, whether it's a harbinger of things to come or whether it's just somebody happening to be coming through New York and invited to the Criterion offices. I have just learned over the years to trust Criterion releases, and even if I don't like them, again, I tend to find something within them. So bring on more Amalric, and yeah, I'm good with either his roles or his work as a director. I'd love to explore more.
Well, a friend told me that you might change your mind after you watch Tom Jones. Just saying. there's also The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, yeah. Which I really liked at the time, and I still like, but I don't know that it would hold up as far as rewatches go. I think it's, I don't know. What, you guys think that would be a good fit?
Yeah, it's not my favorite. I think it also could be, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was the narrator on the Hitchcock Truffaut documentary. So
oh, interesting.
Maybe?
Yeah.
I also have to say, it could be confirmation that the worst James Bond movie of all time, Quantum of Solace, is coming to the collection, which would break my heart. The other thing I wanted to say is, I'm obsessed with the picture. It genuinely looks like he is... picked up Heaven's Gate in the library, fallen over drunk, and he has that, like, glass of probably water, but in my mind, vodka next to him. He's just so overwhelmed by the magic of the closet that he can't take it anymore. It's delightful.
That's got to be it. I think he's drunk and slipped. He looks out of no. I think he's just probably the angle, maybe a little more stylistic than most Criterion photos or closet photos. Did you have any thoughts on Diving Bell, Josh?
I like Diving Bell. I haven't seen it since, you know, its Oscar run years ago. And I haven't revisited it yet. So I don't know how well it'll hold up. But I like Julian Schnabel's work. I really liked Basquiat quite a bit. I find him to be an interesting visual filmmaker.
Yeah, and I like that he's a painter too, yeah. And I think, not just some Joe that put a few pictures in a coffee shop, but a real bona fide, talented painter. Yeah. And yeah, he did do Truffaut, Hitchcock, and Hitchcock Truffaut, but that's already come out on from Coen, so that won't be coming to Criterion. Although that would be neat if they even as a supplement, that would be neat, but not going to happen. All right, well, and so I have a couple films that are not coming to Criterion that are coming to other labels that I guess could be rumored to come to Criterion or have been rumored, so I think we'll just dash people's dreams. So The Sacrifice by Andrei Tarkovsky is coming to Kino on Blu-ray, which it's already been on Kino. In fact, it's already been on Blu-ray on Kino. So it's, in fact, I have that Blu-ray, so damn. that means I may be rebuying it. So I think it's a new restoration. I have it on good authority, Robert, that you were reading a book about The Sacrifice. So any thoughts on this this release? A re-release?
I'm very excited. I haven't seen the film yet. I'm waiting to, because I didn't get the Blu-ray that you bought, Aaron, specifically because I want to see it up on the big screen first. I never want to see a Tarkovsky movie unless the first time I experience it, it's up on a big screen. That's why I haven't bought... Somehow I haven't seen Stalker yet, because when it was playing in LA, I somehow was not in town. But I'm reading about the background of the film itself, trying to learn everything that I can, because I really am fascinated by him as a filmmaker, and just the fact that he was making it as he was slowly dying, and it's so interesting, and it seems like there's so much here. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, that's and it might have been Stalker that killed him. That's very sad. But yeah, there's I think with that in context of his mortality, and I don't know how aware he was of it. Did he know he was dying, Robert?
It seems like he did, because he died
Had an
quite
idea.
soon after.
And there's the last 40 minutes or so is just chilling. So that it's I wouldn't put it up there with Stalker or Solaris or Andrei Rublev, but it's very great film. And actually the first 45 minutes too, great photography and the way he just kind of can capture those tracking shots. So Josh, any thoughts on Sacrifice?
Yeah, I actually just watched it towards the end of last year while it was still on FilmStruck, and I find with Tarkovsky, I need two or three viewings to really begin to even scratch the surface of what's going on there. So for an introduction, I'm really intrigued, and I found it really moving, and I'm excited to continue to dig into it. I always. Kino isn't necessarily my favorite label, but I think that they will do a good job with this one, and yeah, it'll be good to get the restoration because the print on FilmStruck was okay, but it wasn't great. So I think
Yeah,
it'll be nice to see it restored.
Is Kino anyone's favorite label? I mean, I feel like Kino is, the ex-boyfriend that you call at 2 in the morning when you're like when all else has failed.
Yeah.
Kino gets a lot of hate. They've done a lot for silent film. They put out a lot of good silent films. They put out a really good that African American set was good, and I think some of the recent films releases have been quite solid. So I know it's they were just kind of and one thing Wong Kar-wai especially they had put out some bad prints
Yeah.
of those films. So yeah, I get it, but on the other hand, they didn't have 4K restorations, so yeah, it's tough, but yeah, they're definitely not the caliber of Criterion. And all right, well, that's it for the Criterion news. So let's talk some Elevator to the Gallows. This is the definitive 1958 Louis Malle, his feature film debut. He had worked with Jacques Cousteau on The Silent World, but he was really a co-director, and I think most of the credit was probably Cousteau's. And a lot of people consider this the beginning of the French New Wave. I don't know. Would you guys agree, or do you think it's just happens to be a young filmmaker that made one of the first films that it's associated with that?
I think we see some of the seeds to the new wave here. I think we see some of the genre trappings that the new wave filmmakers were really interested in. And I think we also get to see some narrative techniques that just aren't standard. They aren't we have the two heroes or the two main characters that we think we're going to follow, we never see them in the same scene together. And they're one's trapped in an elevator and the other is wandering the streets looking for him. And so yeah, I think there are some touches that definitely would kind of that we'd see more of in new wave films. And even if I'm not a scholar on the new wave, so I don't know that I would be good at giving a really definitive answer for where that movement starts. But yeah, I think this is definitely part of it.
Yeah, I think with Cahiers du Cinéma is really the critics is where it started, and where the roots were planted. And I think that Louis Malle, because he put out such great work and important work, he was retroactively installed. In fact, I think I forget the terminology. I think they called it left bank French New Wave. Like, so they had some of the other filmmakers that were making films at the time. Then, of course, he had Godard, Truffaut. I guess really them too, and Chabrol,
Yeah.
maybe Romare.
Demi.
Demy, yeah, there are a whole bunch of them. Great filmmakers. This, I think, it just so happens that, in fact, you might even credit The Silent World for giving him his opportunity here because he won the Palme d'Or with that film, and got a shot at taking a novel and adapting it and kind of making it his own. And then also Jean Moreau, breaking her through, even though she'd acted before. So yeah, as you already mentioned, it's about a couple, you could say, criminal couple that orchestrate a crime that doesn't go so well. And yeah, who can you imagine the actor whose role is stuck in the elevator for an hour and a half? Can you imagine his reaction when reading his role? So I'm stuck in an elevator for an hour and a half. But Moreau plays his lover, and then there's another subplot, not really a subplot, but they're kind of an intersecting plot with two young couple that actually commit some crimes as well. And I won't get into the plot. The plot's less important, I think, than the atmosphere. We have Jean Moreau wandering the Champs-Élysées. We have Miles Davis kind of orchestrating her mood. There's a little confusion about what's really going on. She thinks one thing is happening when in reality we know that that he's just stuck in an elevator. But this was my second time watching it. Had you seen it before, or Robert?
Yeah, I saw it at AFI in a very unfortunate screening where the air conditioning broke. And so it just kept getting hotter and hotter and hotter. So I didn't enjoy it when I saw it at AFI, but I think it was a side effect of the fact that I was sweating to death. when I rewatched it, it's a fine movie. It's quite good. I like the second half much more than the first half. When the first half seems very coincidental, and I understand mm-hmm. that's not really what they're going for plot-wise. As you said, Aaron, they're going for atmospherics. But for some reason, I just could not buy the fact that the two murderers in town just happened to, you know, coincide like that. And despite the fact that Moreau wandering around obviously was groundbreaking in the way that it was shot and stuff like that, her character is literally just wandering around for minutes at a time.
Yeah. And yeah, there's some issues with the writing. I think that's very safe.
Yeah, that said, it's a decent noir. I'm not unhappy for seeing it. I feel like this is a movie that, had it not been groundbreaking in several ways, would be barely remembered today. But since it is, we watch it and we enjoy it. But it was good. I'm happy I saw it.
Yeah,
I think that's safe.
Yeah, I'd seen it once before, you know, years ago, and so I rewatched it yesterday on the new Blu-ray. And yeah, I can definitely, some of those stretches with Moreau wandering just go on a little too long, and yet there are some really striking images in it. I think of the one where she's crossing the street, and it doesn't seem like she's breaking her stride, but she's just going right in between cars as they're...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Great shot.
That shot, yeah. That still stands out to me as one of those just kind of magical moments in film that only film can do really well. And I like my noir. I like the whole the fates coming in to crush our characters. But yeah, there are some pacing things that I think are definite weaknesses to the film. But then you have again the beautiful cinematography. You have the great score by Miles Davis, and all of that I think works to. Like you were saying, Robert, elevate it just a little bit more, and it does become this kind of groundbreaking film.
Elevate it right up to those gallows. I'm sorry, that was bad.
Sorry, I did not intend that pun.
I'm so sorry.
It lifted the film.
Sometimes I should not say words.
No, that was great. Now that's a good point about Moreau. You know, when she's wandering, even though it's one of those when you stop to think about it. You know, she's kind of just moping around some of the most beautiful, more scenic areas of France, but it doesn't really have a lot of purpose. But she does have that je ne sais quoi, that she just kind of glides around town, and she has that kind of stoic, somber expression. And of course, we've seen Moreau in plenty of films. She's one of the leading stars. We just lost her, actually, just a little while ago. But I think it probably sounds like I'm a little more critical of it than I am, because I think I like it despite its flaws. And maybe it is kind of because I do kind of put it in that square peg of the French New Wave and think of it as an important film. And I think it was, even if, I doubt if Godard stole too much of it for Breathless, but, but I think it's important just for film in general. And I think it was very important, of course, for Mao's career. And I'm a big fan of what he did in the 60s and 70s and yeah, even the 80s.
So. Yeah, and he's one of those filmmakers that just, he worked in so many different modes. You know, everything from My Dinner with Andre to the documentaries to Au Revoir les Enfants. And, you know, he's just...
Black Moon.
Yeah, he's one of those filmmakers that, even if his films don't always hit me just right, I find that there's some really beautiful images, there's some really fun things. I'm one of the people that really loves Black Moon. I find that to be a surrealist, just hypnotic piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, well, we talked on the cast about Zazie, Dan's Lemaitre. He really is all over the place, and but yeah, I think he's pretty consistent, even though I think very daring as a filmmaker. So all right, well, I guess we've already talked a lot about Elevator to the Gallows. So any final thoughts, Robert?
I just wanted to say that Miles Davis's score is actually incredible, and that is something that I think holds up beautifully well throughout the film. It works as a piece aside from the film itself, and it works like gangbusters in the film at elevating the mood. Elevating. Oh God, I did it too.
Elevating. But lifting.
Lifting the mood. I just think that it's... I cannot say enough good things about it.
Yeah.
Enhancing the movie. Yeah, no, I agree. And in fact, that score, I'm sure it's available as an album, but that's one I could just listen to. And I think, you know, without that score, that would be a very different movie. Can you imagine kind of a humdrum noir score? It would change the aesthetic, that her walking down the streets would be completely different without Miles Davis. And you kind of take it for granted, too, after watching it a couple times. It just feels like it belongs. But it was really very, very groundbreaking for the time.
Yeah, I guess we forget that, like, the lonely trumpet didn't really happen in film noir before this. Before this, it was more Bernard Herrmann types,
exactly,
or Miklos Rosa types, but after this, you couldn't get rid of the trumpet. Jerry Goldsmith did the trumpet in Chinatown and also in L.A. Confidential, very famously, and then it's just become such a groundbreaking is the wrong word, but it's become such a... weight for noir. You can't have it without the trumpet, and it's because of this movie.
Yeah, I think especially neo-noir. Yeah, for sure. All right, well, I guess let's wrap up Louis Malle and get to some short takes. So as people know, this is just when we talk about something we've seen recently, Criterion, Filmstruck, whatever associated with the collection. So Josh, we'll start with you. What have you seen?
Yeah, I watched The Connection on Filmstruck. It's a film by Shirley Clarke from 62. I've been trying to catch up on some of those Criterion Channel titles that are only available on Filmstruck that are going to be expiring soon. And this was really fascinating. It's part of the beginning of the New York independent film scene. And it's the story of a documentarian trying to capture the life of heroin addicts. And she's kind of playing with verite style and kind of calling attention to the fact that whenever someone's in front of the camera, they're performing. And she's constantly drawing attention to the camera itself. Everything that we see is being filmed by the documentarian and his camera operator. And they begin to enter the scene and step out of the scene. It's a really, really fascinating film. Definitely experimental. I'm a sucker for meta narratives, and it plays with that. And it also plays with the idea of when we're trying to document human misery, how are we responsible for understanding the suffering? Are we responsible for for exploiting it? It's a really fascinating film. It reminds me a bit of some of the Cassavetes stuff. I haven't seen the Norman Mailer set or the Robert Downey Sr. set, but I think it has some ties into that, maybe more competently done than some of the Mailer films. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's interesting.
Is it gone yet?
It leaves, no. I think, on the 23rd, I think. So we've got about another week and a half.
We have a couple weeks, yeah. Depending on when you listen to the episode. Yes. Shirley Clarke, she has a bunch of films on there, but are they all going away?
I think her two shorts are going away as well. The last I checked, The Bridges Go Round and Paris Parks on Sunday, I think.
I need to keep up with that more, but there's so much.
I know.
How do you tackle all that? So, Robert, what's your short take?
I watched the three films by Hiroshi Tishigahara. Did I pronounce it right?
I think so.
Okay, I watched the box set this week. I had found it at an estate sale for someone in Burbank, and oh my god, it's amazing. I love it so much. Pitfall is an incredible ghost story. My favorite is Woman in the Dunes.
Yeah.
You guys have seen this, yes?
I've seen that, yeah.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It was obsessed. Upgraded.
Yeah, the new one is so beautiful.
It's stunning. And the way that it gets into both the psyche of the male character who is our way into the story, and then by the end, you care so much about her as well. It seems like it's just fascinating in all the right ways. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. And then, of course, visually, it's stunning, even though, and don't quote me on this, even though it's on a podcast and I'm obviously being quoted, sand doesn't really work the way that it is portrayed as working in the movie. Like, you can't have those weird shapes that it creates, and yet I totally bought it and I totally fell in love with it. And finally, The Face of Another is pretty close to a masterpiece as well. Visually, it's the most distinguished of the box, I think, and the stuff that he does with altering the main actor, whose name I forget, his face slightly from scene to scene, and the questions about humanity, although it is nailed a bit too hard on the nose with, I just mixed metaphors there, I apologize, by the doctor who keeps saying, you're about to lose your soul, no, seriously, you're about to lose your soul. The questions that it brings up and the way that it explores what humanity means and how one remains human in a different quote-unquote face or a different quote-unquote body is stunning. It has images I'm never going to forget, and especially that opening, which is an x-ray of a guy speaking, is incredible.
Yeah, great set. I haven't seen Pitfall yet, but it's on Filmstruck, so because I don't have the DVD set. But Face of Another is remarkable. Sort of a sci-fi film in a way, but not really. Yes and no. And definitely shades of the Holocaust. All right, well, for me, I'm going to struggle with this one. I have The Color of Pomegranates, which is not yet out on Criterion. It'll be out, next month? But it came out from Second Sight, the UK, and this gorgeous package. It arrived last week, and I put it in over the weekend, and it was beautiful and breathtaking and really poetic and literally poetic. It really is a visual poem about a poet. There's a lot of animal violence. There's a lot of things. It's a tough film. It's a challenging film. It's difficult. It's not one. So basically, my reaction was WTF to it. It looks beautiful, and not even like Tarkovsky, where there's some dialogue and contemplating your mortality or your place in your philosophical quandaries. It's all there, but it's not as there's not as much insight. It's more just images. So I look forward to watching it again. And I think this time I'll enjoy the Tony Raines commentary when the Criterion comes out. Although there are a number of features on the Second Sight disc. So I think this is a good one to double dip. I would warn people that even despite its reputation, it's on the Sight and Sound 250. Don't expect Silence of the Lambs. This is not a very accessible film. In fact, I'd say it's not accessible at all. It is challenging, but in a good way. And I think people like us, I think it rewards our patience and attention. So that's it. A collage of beautiful images that I really did enjoy, even if I didn't have any idea what the fuck was going on. So,
yeah.
Have you guys seen this yet?
Yeah, it's a visual poem. As you warned, there's things that animal cruelty and stuff like that where I would warn anyone before they see it. However, my favorite image, I think, is that shot of all of the books drying out that comes early in the film, if I'm correct, right, Aaron?
Oh, I couldn't.
There's this shot of books drying where they're all open and the pages are flapping back and forth in the
Okay,
wind. And a
yeah.
child is sitting on what we think is the ground, but it's impossible because he's actually sitting on a wall. And it has never left me. I haven't seen the movie in years, but I just was so astonished with the scene, that shot in particular, that it's haunted me ever since. The movie itself, as you said, is very, very hard to get into, but if you just sort of view it as a tone poem, I think it works.
And I think it'll be a good one to watch with the commentary to get some context and sort of, I don't, it's not narrative, of course, but a little bit of an idea of what's going on and what's being said. It's if I were just to be left on an island to figure this out, well, maybe I'd have to be on an island because I don't think I could give it the 30 so watches and read all the books to get there. But no, it's quite a stunning movie. I think people in our circles will be enthusiastically excited about the film. Some will scratch their heads, and some will, I guess pinch their nose. So it's not for everybody.
Yeah, I'm really excited
All
to
right,
check
well,
this one
shall
out. Yeah, so
yeah.
eager for the
Let's get into
release.
films.
Sorry.
I am too. No, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. So, are you guys ready for
Yeah.
Filmstruck? This is going to be a tough week. So there's no way we can cover all this stuff. So I'll just kind of do a snapshot because we have 2 weeks worth and we have about double the content. So we already talked about TCM Select. We had Casablanca, The Thin Man, and Father of the Bride. I wrote Bridge on our outline, but it is not. There's no father of bridges that I'm aware of. Maybe an architect. So Casablanca and The Thin Man. I think we're all on board with these, right? Nick and Nora and oh, I can't remember the characters from the Casablanca. Boy, that's gonna
Rick? You mean
Rick, of
Rick?
course, Rick. And Father of the Bride, and I'm not actually not as fond of that one, but and then we had some other things. We had Star of the Week. Last week was Bette Davis. This week was Peter Falk, or the week before was Peter Falk.
Yay!
And then this week was Jean Gabin, of course, which hits me in a certain area. Not that area, my wife. So very TCM-ish. And we had more curations. So I won't go into those, but just because I just rattled off a bunch of stuff. So, Josh, what are your reactions to these groupings?
Yeah, it's really exciting to see with the TCM Select, just the right out of the gate they're coming up with Casablanca and Thin Man, so some really great classics of old Hollywood. I love Peter Falk. It's nice to see him get the spotlight. I didn't dig into the Bette Davis stuff very much, but Jean Gabin, I love that they have such a range for his career. So I'm excited to dive a little bit more deeply into some of his later work because most of what I've seen of his has been his 30s work. And so this is really exciting.
They have a lot of his later
Yeah.
work. From what I understand, it's not all as good.
Yeah.
Well, of course, his 30s work is kind of unparalleled. Sorry, go ahead. I cut
Oh,
you off.
no, that was it. Yeah. I'm excited. I loved Touche pas au Grippe, I think. I probably
Sure.
butchered the pronunciation there.
That's
I saw
okay.
that in theaters at a restoration, and that was fantastic to see. So, yeah, I he's one of the greats. So I'm excited to see more.
Speaking of crime dramas, Robert, any thoughts on the ones we mentioned?
I spent the week rewatching the Thin Man movies,
Oh,
and
boy.
I find it astonishing that all six of them are either very good or great. Like, how is that possible? The first one, of course, I think is one of the best films ever made. It's one of the best comedies.
A lot of fun.
It's right up there with Bringing Up Baby for me. But the sequels are wow. The first sequel after The Thin Man was actually nominated for an Oscar for best screenplay, which never happens for a sequel unless you're, The Godfather Part 2 or the Before trilogy. But the others just every single one of them held up. And they even have a kid, and kids normally mean, you know, the movie is going to suck for sure, for sure. But no, I'm just so happy that I revisited them. And yeah. Myrna Loy's smile, I don't think we've ever had another actress who has a smile like hers. I loved it so much. And then Bette Davis, I'm going to have a lot of fun diving into very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and William Powell is the great straight man for Loy. What a pairing, what chemistry. I've only seen the first two, maybe the third one, I can't remember. But yeah, that's good to know that there's not diminishing returns, because Nick and Nora have a special place in my heart, and in my fridge, in my glass as well.
There is this one subplot, goes home where they have to stop drinking. Oh, it's special. Oh, it's wonderful.
That's fun.
Go ahead, Josh.
Oh no, that's really fun. I'm really glad to hear also that the sequels keep going. I think of when Criterion was on Hulu, I watched a lot of the Bulldog Drummond films and. From around the same time period, and they were all kind of middling to poor, and it's nice to see a film series that holds up over the course of it. So I'm excited to dive into the other ones. Yeah.
All right, well, let me race through here. We also had 20-somethings, which had Slacker, Singles, Barcelona, Before Sunrise, and Tiny Furniture, so kind of a mixed bag there. We had directed by G.W. Pabst, which we talked about a couple of his a few weeks ago. So some of his silent features and then early sound work. We had Director of the Week, Christopher Guest, and it had all the films you would expect. And then we had a couple other curated segments that I'm not going to get into. Love on the Lamb, Neo-Noir. Robert, and by the way, Robert, your Skype's going in and out, so I hope we're going to keep you, but hope the Patreon listeners dear. Might... Yeah, it's okay. On the recording, you'll be fine. The Patreon listeners might miss some of you, but any thoughts on these?
I desperately want to see Diary of a Lost Girl. I have wanted to see it for years. I bought the DVD when it came out, and unfortunately it didn't work, so I had to return it, and then it was sold out. So I'm very excited to finally... Because it seems like such a beautiful companion piece to Pandora's Box. I'm very excited to dive into it.
I haven't seen it either. Yeah, there's the Masters of Cinema. I think I have. That says something about me. I'm not sure if I have it or not. Josh?
Yeah, you know, the 20-somethings brings me back to high school and early college. I have a fondness in my heart for that entire set there, even if they're not all great. The Pap stuff is something I'm eager to dive into. I have all of his Criterion releases sitting on my shelf. Just haven't taken the plunge yet. And Christopher Guest, I was a theater kid. I got my degree in theater.
Okay.
And so Waiting for Guffman came out at the perfect time for me in college. And again, that there's that fondness in my heart for his work, even if some of it's better than others. So yeah, this is all fun stuff.
I'd say kind of like maybe The Thin Man. It's you know, maybe not everyone is as good as the first one, which is Spinal Tap, but I think they're all pretty good. Maybe for your consideration was speaking of the Oscars.
Yes.
Was maybe the weakest link. Was it something for Purim? I forget the name of the fake film. All right, well, let's go move on to the Criterion Channel. We had another Observations on Film Art, The Darkness of War, and Wooden Crosses, which I didn't get to. Actually, I didn't get to a lot of these. Side note, I went out of town this week, so and then last week we did a show, so I didn't have as much time. Then we had a short feature, a couple of them, Najd in Paris by Romare, and then Breathless, speaking of which. And then we had... feature called Art by Sutanu, and then In the Realm of the Senses. So art must be pretty interesting. So I'll just stop there. Robert, any thoughts on this grouping?
I saw Wooden Crosses, and I loved it. I thought it was one of the best war movies I had ever seen. There's many sequences in the film where you think that you're watching a miniature, because the shots of the explosions and things like that, you think that it has to be a miniature shot, and then you see actors stand up in the foreground, and you realize that it was done for real, not for play. And it took my breath away, and it's one of the very rare films, and it's famous for this, where you walk away from it completely devastated, and there's nothing positive about war in it at all. And it also made me very paranoid that I'm going to get lice. I will say that for anyone who's seen it. They know what I'm talking about.
Well, wash your hair, yes. or anywhere else if that's what you're talking about. Josh, any thoughts on this batch?
Yeah, I really love Wooden Crosses as well, and the observations on film art is great. Really looking at the way light is used and the way Raymond Bernard uses three-point lighting for certain scenes, but as we start to get into more of the chaos of war, using single lights to begin to have the characters blend into one another and to kind of highlight the chaos. And I've loved all of the observations on film art. I think they're all really insightful, and this
absolutely.
One was great. And then the shorts and features were interesting. Nadja in Paris, I thought, was a nice little, it feels very much like a Romare film. I don't know that it pairs as well with Breathless, but it's it's good. It's really good. And then Art was a fascinating short. Again, I sometimes I feel like the pairings don't work quite as well. This one, it's a short about a couple of film producers trying to convince the mother of a teenage girl to perform in their film where she's going to be sexually abused, and there's it raises all these interesting ethical questions and the idea of what do you do for art, they're trying to bring. They're trying to bring awareness to sex trafficking in the film that they're making. And they're saying, you know, this girl, she's not actually going to be hurt. It's just going to be pretend. We can make it so that she doesn't know what she's doing. But it's really, it shows how unethical sometimes you are when you're trying to create art. It's interesting. The ending is a little, I need to think about it a little bit more, but it was interesting.
I'll have to check it out. Well, we have a good bit more on the Criterion Channel, and these next two groupings are pretty intimidating. So I don't think Poor by Agnes Varda and John Cassavetes' Five Films. So I'm sure we have nothing to say about either of those. I'm just going to move on because they're both great. Agree?
Yeah.
I'm heartbroken that there's not more. I wish that there were 5 to 7 by Agnes Varda.
Yeah.
You did there.
I'm sorry. I came up with that earlier this week.
I can't think of any numerology for Cassavetes. Sorry, I think I'm talking over you, Robert. What was that?
I said, I apologize. I thought that up earlier this week, and I was so proud of it.
Good stuff. We had an Adventures in Movie Going with Megan Abbott, and I caught some of that. She was interesting. And then we had, I'll finish with our Friday double features. We had The Lady Killers and La Poison, which, great pairing. And then The Freshman and Shoot the Piano Player. So I'll just kick it back to you, Josh. Any thoughts on the rest of the Criterion Channel?
The Adventures in Movie Going with Megan Abbott was interesting. I loved her, the way most of her selections tied into David Lynch. I thought that was really fun to hear how influential Lynch had been to her in her writing. And then the Friday double features, I watched The Lady Killers and La Poison back-to-back yesterday, and that was fantastic. That was a great
pairing. You guys, you really did prep for the show.
This gave me an excuse to watch more, so I have no... I had the day off yesterday since I'm working tomorrow, so this was great.
I think this might be one of the best pairings in Friday double feature history.
I
haven't seen The Lady Killers in a long time, but great tonally, very, very similar.
Yeah, The Freshman was fine. There's some really great moments in it. I watched it years and years ago before I had even really started getting into film a little deeper. And it's fine when I rewatched it. There's some great moments, but it's not... I don't think it pairs as well with Shoot the Piano Player.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, Mr. Robert, any thoughts on the grouping?
I kind of agree with every single thing that Josh just said, and I'm happy that you didn't like The Freshman that much either, because I really like him, and The Freshman was kind of a chore for me to get through.
Yeah.
It was one of those, like, I'm going to go make my macaroni and cheese now instead of doing it, and then I watched another 20 minutes, then I went to Taco Bell, and then I, you know. but it had wonderful bits in it. It just, it was the first one where I was watching, and I couldn't.
I don't even remember. If it were the Freshman from Harold Lloyd, it'd be a different story. But yeah, I do remember this Marlon Brando's cameo. But yeah, it doesn't really stick with me. So I think I'll take your advice and let that one stay deep in the memory bank. All right, guys. Well, I think we're done with the Criterion Channel. So shall we get to our pieces of flair? So this is just stuff that. Not Criterion related. So Josh, what do you got for
me? A few weeks ago, I asked the community about giallo films. That's a blind spot for me. And I'm not the biggest horror fan.
That's right.
I can enjoy it and appreciate it. But everyone seemed to recommend Deep Red. So I ordered my Amazon UK copy of Deep Red because it was cheaper, I think, than the US if there was one. And yeah, I watched that this week. It was fun. I don't know that I'll ever be a complete giallo convert, but I can see how influential the genre is, and especially a film like this is, to De Palma, to so many filmmakers, and to the slasher films in general. And I loved I found it so much creepier than a lot of slasher films because we don't see even the shadow of the killer most of the time. So much of it is from the killer's point of view, and I found that really, really effective and really, really creepy. And I have the little kid song stuck in my head for the last few days, so thank you for that, everyone.
Please sing a few bars.
Did your version have the goblin score?
It did have the goblin score, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. Because that without that, you'd really it'd be like half a movie.
Yeah,
it would not be that great. I love the score. Speaking of Miles Davis,
yeah.
Not speaking of Miles Davis, different style, but
speaking right, of film scores,
yeah.
Speaking of films with awesome, unique scores. So, Robert, any thoughts or any flair?
Well, first, Josh, you've seen Suspiria, though,
I have not seen Suspiria. That's a blind spot for me again.
Go there
that's
next.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
That one transcends giallo fans. So I think even if you're an art film and not into giallo or just moderately into giallo, you can get into that. But don't think about it too much, like a lot of horrors. What were you going to say, Robert?
My piece of flair is also horror related. It's a podcast, as I'm sure most of the listeners know. You must remember this is on hiatus for, it seems like, 14 years. And so I'm desperately trying to find more podcasts about film history in particular. And I came across the podcast called Inside the Exorcist. And I felt like I knew everything there was to know about The Exorcist. So it seemed unnecessary. And then I started listening to it. And it is fascinating. The host, whose name I forget, he goes into the story that, you know, launched The Exorcist, the one that inspired William Peter Blatty. He goes into Blatty's novel. He goes into how Blatty chose Friedkin, because it was actually Blatty who decided that Friedkin would be perfect for it. There's so much fascinating information. It's done very, very stylistically well, and there's another season of the podcast called Inside Psycho, which I can't wait to see.
Nice.
Listen to, whatever.
Psycho was on the syllabus for three consecutive film classes, so I'm okay if I love it, but I'm okay if I never see it again. yeah, I'll have to check that out. I've actually been missing a lot of podcasts, but we do have one coming out soon about film history, so just FYI. My piece of flair, I had trouble because I basically binge-watched Oscar films and then went out of town. So I think I'm just going to kind of tie those two together, or not those two, but Oscar films and no, just Oscar films. So the documentary films, I didn't get to catch all of them, but I watched a few, and I really was taken aback by Abacus was a good one, and of course Icarus, which won, which I think was exceptional. We're about to watch Faces Places. Actually, we're going to probably watch that tonight. But since I didn't like I, Tonya too much, I thought it was okay. I like certain elements of it. I thought Janney was fine. A little over the top, but good. I noticed the Academy does tend to reward over the top profane performances, which is fine. But yeah, I preferred some others. But after watching I, Tonya, I was I kind of went down the rabbit hole. You know, we just had the Olympics. I read into that controversy, and I went and watched the 30 for 30, the Price of Gold documentary, which of course was not nominated for an Oscar, but told such a better story. So if you know, I'm sure there are a lot of fans of I, Tonya. I didn't like the just kind of how light it was, and it was basically like a mixtape of the 70s greatest hits. The music didn't fit. Speaking of scores, it didn't really have one. But the story, I think just didn't get its just due with the film. So if you are interested in the Harding and boy, I'm senior moments today, Nancy Kerrigan moments, check out the documentary. So that's it. That's the show. Thanks for joining, guys.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Aaron.
It's a pleasure being on.
So, yeah, glad to have you guys. So, Josh, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Josh Hornbeck, and my WordPress site that I'm trying to be better at updating is joshhornbeck.wordpress.com. You can also find me on Letterboxd at Josh Hornbeck as well.
All right, and Robert.
I don't tweet because I refuse to have my thoughts reduced to 140 characters or 260 or whatever it is. But you can find me on facebook.com/Bob Taylor, not Robert Taylor, Bob Taylor. I know Robert Taylor was taken.
Bob.
I know. don't judge me. And then my WordPress site is the Robert Taylor Odyssey at .wordpress.com. And every Monday I update with a film noir. Every Wednesday I'm going through the filmography of Tarsem. And then every Friday I am going through the AFI Top 100 films. So enjoy.
Oh, fun. Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, you can find me, AWest505, on Twitter, and I make do with those 260 characters or whatever it is now. You can use images too, Robert, just saying. And you can find the show at Criterion Cast on the Master Feed. You can find us in the Criterion Now group. You can support our Patreon at patreon.com/CriterionNow. So, all right, thanks, guys, for joining. Fun times.
Thank you.
Fun times. Yeah.